financial wisdom in these unsettling times. Millions of Americans are facing financial crisis during the COVID-19 pandemic, especially those who have been furloughed or laid off from their jobs. The CARES Act offers some relief for people who have federally backed mortgages or student loans to pay, but there are limitations. Even people not facing financial hardship right now may have questions about changing their future plans. Mortgage rates are at an historic low. Is now the time to refinance? Is it a good idea to take an early withdrawal from retirement funds? What's happening with stimulus checks? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we welcome back Washington Post columnist and author Michelle Singletary. She's here to answer your questions about finances in the face of COVID-19. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As the pandemic continues to take its financial toll, we turn to finance expert Michelle Singletary for her advice on money matters during these uncertain times. She's a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post and an author. Her most recent book is The 21-Day Financial Fast. Michelle, welcome back to Maine Calling.
I'm so glad to be back.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. What are your questions for Michelle Singletary? Here's your chance. One, what unexpected personal finance challenges are you facing? How have your thoughts on spending and saving been affected by COVID-19? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, let's start with retirement savings. The CARES Act allows people under the age of 59 and a half to withdraw money early from their 401k without the 10% penalty. At least one study that I read this morning shows that already 30% of people with retirement plans have done this, have taken money out early. In your view, when is it okay to withdraw early from your 401k, if ever?
I suppose that many of those people who withdrew probably had a job lost or a reduction in their income. And if you have tapped all your emergency money, if you even had any, and you just can't find money somewhere else to keep the roof over your head or food on the table, then you have to do what you have to do, and that may mean tapping your retirement account much sooner than you ever planned. And I'm okay with that because it's easy for us to say, those of us who still have jobs, to say, don't touch that money, don't touch that money. But if you're so desperate, and I'd rather you do that than maybe rack up more credit card debt or take out a payday loan. So in those situations where this is truly your last resort, outside of some very, very expensive credit, like a cash advance, then, take the money, and the CARES Act allows you to do that without taking that big 10% penalty hit.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about it, though, if this study is accurate, 30% of people having done so, the unemployment rate is not 30%, so some people are taking the money out for other reasons. Can you see any other reason?
Well, I mean, it could also include people who are just taking their regular distributions. You know, that's what it's there for, so that at some point you're going to be using that money to supplement your retirement. And it could be that, you know, for right now, you know, if you're, it would be 72 or older now, but there may be some people still 70 and a half who are taking their required minimum distributions from their plan. So it could be a combination of those people who are just taking their regular distributions that they need to take for their retirement, and then also people who are tapping into it because they've been furloughed or maybe their spouse has lost their job.
Okay, well, let's talk about loans, because a lot of people who have been laid off or furloughed or are working fewer hours right now or in a different kind of job are worried about just the monthly bills. And I know that the CARES Act allows some forbearance, some pause on some loans. So tell us, which lenders are required by law to issue forbearance, to say to people, you know, I have to give you a pause in your payments? And which lenders are not?
Right. So the CARES Act allows for those mortgages that are government-backed or government-held. And so those loans would be loans that were backed by the government-sponsored enterprise, you know it as GSE, or FHA or VA loans or USDA loans or Fannie and Freddie Mac. So if your loans were in those categories, then under the CARES Act, you get up to an initial 180 days forbearance and then an additional 180 days after that if you still need it. But here's the thing. You have to ask for it. It's not automatic. You would have to call your mortgage servicer and say, I need this break because I can't pay my mortgage. And then they have to give it to you. Now, many lenders are giving it to people in 90-day increments instead of the full 180. So you might be a little confused, well, why is it 90? Because the lenders have surmised that maybe people would just start off with 3 months. Maybe they don't need the 4 or 6 months. So just start off with 90 days initially. But then after that period, if you're getting close to that, which many people probably did if they asked for it right away when this law passed, they're bumping up to that first 90 days, then you have to call back and ask, can I get some additional time if I can't, because I can't pay my mortgage. Now, if you have a private mortgage that is not backed by any of those agencies that I told you, not federally backed, then you're subject to whatever your mortgage servicer, the investors who own those loans. So they may follow the federal path, or they may just give you 1 month or 2 months. You have to negotiate with those lenders separately because they're not covered under the CARES Act.
Do you have to prove financial hardship, or can anyone put off a payment?
For the most part, no, because they didn't want to put in a lot of requirements that would delay people getting relief. So it's really sort of yourself certifying that you, in fact, were impacted by the coronavirus in some way, either you directly or your spouse, or maybe you're taking care of your parents, or maybe your children can't go back to school, and so you had to take off time from work. So those are sort of the scenarios on which you would get this relief. And honestly, you know, initially, I think a lot of people were calling, trying to get it just because they were scared. But if you don't need it, don't get it. I mean, because you want to be able to, you know, have that ability to have that somewhere down the road. And I think there were some people who were taking it who just wanted a breather. And that's not smart, because this forbearance is just that. It is not a forgiveness of the money. And so you're going to have to pay that money back eventually, and it may be even burdensome down the road. So if you can't afford it, don't take that, you know, pause in your payment.
If you pause your payment, say your mortgage payment, your car payment, your college loan, what does that do to your credit score?
Well, under the CARES Act, they're not supposed to report it as how they normally would do it, a forbearance or some sort of disruption in your normal lending contract. They're not supposed to report it. And if they are reporting it, you need to call them and say the law says you don't. You're not supposed to do this. Again, for those federal-backed loans, if it's private lenders, they can report it. So definitely check it if it's a student loan or your home loan. The other issues, you have to negotiate. Like if it was a credit card pause, you have to negotiate it with the credit card lender.
Okay. We talked about mortgage rates in terms of if you can't pay it, but other people are looking at the news headlines that say mortgage rates are at an historic low, some at 2.5%. I know that generally you're an advocate for paying off your home as quickly as possible, but do these rates change the math? Are there people out there who you would recommend refinance their homes?
I think you have to take it as an individual situation. People are sort of driven. Don't make this decision just by the low rates. And this is how I explain it to people, because, you know, I always get criticized. I say, if you can pay cash for a car, pay cash for a car. And people go, what if I can get 0% interest? I don't care. Because right now, if you lost your job, if you had a 0% interest rate, would you really care? Because you still can't make that car loan, even at 0%. So you want to put yourself in a position where you don't have loans. And so if you are, I have had emails from people who are, you know, only have a couple years left on their mortgage. Well, should I refinance? Are you insane? No, you're almost mortgage free. You're almost there. If you have a mortgage rate that's fairly high and you have good credit and your job is pretty secure, then sure, take advantage of the low rates right now. It's going to be difficult, however, because there's a backlog. You know, they've got to get out and assess your house. There's some cost to it. So you have to look at the overall cost of refinancing and how much you're going to save and when will you break even. You're putting out all this money. At what point you're going to be, you know, you're going to break even? Are you going to, you know, maybe move in 5 or 6 years? And it may not be advantageous. However, if you need some break, you need to, for example, I recommend if you've still got your job, everything's okay, and you want to reduce your rate, go ahead and then still make that same payment, because at that point, you're going to put that extra money on your principal and you can get out of that mortgage a lot sooner. So look at it. There's a source called bankrate.com, bankrate.com. And you go on, and they actually have calculators to help you figure out if it's the right time for you to refinance your mortgage.
Oh, interesting. So if you, let's say you were paying, you're paying $1,000 a month on your mortgage, can refinance down to where you would only have to pay $700, but you kept paying $1,000, that $300 goes to your principal.
Goes right to the principal, and that reduces your loan. And listen, for the longest time, we initially had a 15-year, we had an ARM, and we would make, you know, constant payments every month on the principal. And I called when the rates were low like this, you know, after the housing crisis, and the banker was like, why would you do that, honey? Because he was looking at my payments, and it was bringing down the cost of the mortgage. So, in effect, we did our own refinance without putting out a whole bunch of money. Now, eventually, we did refinance because the rates started to tick up. So, you know, we got a 15-year for 2.75%, and we never changed the payments that we were making. We made the exact same payments, and then all that extra money went right onto our principal. And in this case, it was a little bit more, but we still made more payments because I'm just an advocate of getting out of that mortgage as soon as you can, particularly as you head into retirement.
Well, if you don't recognize her voice, we're speaking with personal finance columnist and author Michelle Singletary. Her column, The Color of Money. If you'd like to ask her a question, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Michelle, some people haven't received their stimulus check yet. What do you recommend to people who have not? What do they need to do?
Well, right now, unless you don't normally file a tax return, like you don't make enough to file a tax return, those are really the only folks who have to do something, because the IRS doesn't have information on you to make a stimulus payment. So let's say you're on Social Security or you're on disability, or you just, you know, you have a very low income job, you have to go to IRS.gov. and fill out the non-filer's form. It's right on the home page, non-filer's form, so that you can get your stimulus payments. Now, everybody else, they're just going to be sending them out to you. There's nothing more that you can do right now. They're going to be automatically, I think they probably have maybe about 7 to 5 million more payments to make. So the bulk of the payments have already been made. Now, of course, if you're in that group of, you know, a couple, you know, million, several million, you're thinking, well, what about me? The IRS is down. Their staff, their centers where they would be processing this is down because of the virus. So it's taking time for that last group of people who are in line to get their payments.
All right. So have some patience still. Michelle, one part of the CARES Act I haven't seen widely reported on is the tax deduction for charitable giving up to $300 a year. That's even for people who don't itemize. There is a movement, I'm sure you've read about this, to donate all or some of your stimulus check to a charity. Would you recommend doing so, or at least doing $300 worth?
This is how I recommend people. First, make sure you have your situation covered, that you have an emergency fund. You have something, what I call a life happens fund. Say you're still driving to work, but you still got to drive somewhere. You make sure that you have enough to, say, fix your car if you have a major car repair. Make sure that your finances are tight, that you're covered. And then if you have extra, absolutely donate it. But start home. See if there are family members or friends or church members or members of your synagogue who you know need help. They ran a business or they were working at a restaurant. Charity begins at home, I believe. You start there first, your circle, your family members, extended family members. And then if you're thinking, we're all good, good, then, or maybe you take half of it and give it to family members and half to a nonprofit, because there's such great need. So if you have extra, definitely do that. We didn't get a stimulus payment, but had we would have, and we still have helped other people that we know, who we know are having a difficult time. You know, right now we are all our brothers and sisters keepers, and this is the time, if ever, to be as cheerful.
All right. I want to talk about a couple of the columns you've written recently, Michelle. One of them, very discouraging, talking about Social Security and looking about at not only when Social Security is projected to run out of money, but how COVID-19 might affect that. It was discouraging, especially I'm in my mid-50s. This is my generation you're talking about.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Social Security has been having some problems for a while now. There is less money coming in for the money that they have to put out because, you know, younger folks are not having kids at the same rate. You know, it's just not enough workers. And so, you know, in about 15 years, there's not going to be enough income coming in to pay full benefits. So there will be, like, I think it was the last report, was 76% of the retirement fund. They will only be able to fund that amount. So there has to be something done to fix the shortfall in Social Security. And, you know, there are different plans have been floated, you know, increase the Social Security tax. Right now there's a ceiling, so after a certain amount of money, you know, you're not charged, you're not taxed anymore on your income for Social Security. So there's a lot of things that have to be put on the table. But anytime you talk about additions or updates to Social Security, everybody gets really panicked and nervous, and then the politicians do nothing. But this crisis is coming, and it's coming soon, and they need to try to fix this. And I know everybody's focused right now on the economy, as they should be, but this is a looming problem that is going to be here sooner than later.
Another column about how, of all the people affected by the pandemic financially, that women, 55% hardest hit. And it's not just that they're at greatest risk of being laid off, which they are, but also of not being rehired into the workplace. Yeah. What is going on?
So, you know, the unemployment numbers have gone from single digits to double digits for all major groups, right? Young folks, old folks, African-Americans, minorities. And so, you know, a lot of millions, tens of millions of people out of work. And so the AARP looked at how is this affecting older women and older men. And it turns out that women 55 and older are losing their jobs and are at greater risk even than men in the same age group. It's still double digits for them, but older women a little bit higher than older men, and I call it the trifecta effect. So basically, they are age discrimination. It's real. And then when they lose their job, it takes longer to get another job. And then when they do get a job, they tend to have to take a significant pay cut. And so moving forward, trying to come out of this pandemic, that's going to be really tough because, you know, it's going to take them longer to get a job. And then when they get it, they're going to be making less money. And then they have less time to build back up, or if they tap their retirement fund, to build it back up. And so we're facing a crisis down the road that is going to be a lagging effect of this pandemic as it relates to older women. And we also tend to live longer than our spouses or men. So that means you've got longer to have to take care of yourself on your savings in addition to whatever Social Security you might get, and hopefully a pension if you have one.
Well, we're speaking with Michelle Singletary. We're going to go to a quick break. If you'd like to ask her a question, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Freeman Ellis Family Fund, supporting Maine Public Radio, local, national, and international news you can trust.
For many college students, summer internships have become casualties of the pandemic. Even those that aren't canceled will look a lot different.
It was supposed to be in Cupertino, California, but now I have to do it from my apartment.
I'm Elsa Chang, when internships go remote, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. There's a wonderful world of learning alive and well, great for making good use of time at home for students of all ages at mainpublic.org. It's called PBS Learning Media, and the offerings are diverse and interesting. For example, there's an interactive learning module called What Are Our Energy Choices? Detailing the advantages and disadvantages of different energy sources for generating electricity, and considers the question, what sources will generate our electricity in the future? PBS Learning Media is a free on-demand online media service for grades K through 12 and curious adults. For more information or to check it out, go to mainpublic.org. Click on the Education drop-down.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the Washington Post personal financial columnist Michelle Singletary is with us. Her latest book is The 21-Day Financial Fast. Michelle is hosting a live discussion about your money this Thursday at noon. And on June 4th, she's hosting an online discussion called 55, Underemployed and Faking Normal. You can find out more on the Washington Post website. We invite you to be part of this conversation. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll start with Nina, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Nina. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question, not about the stimulus, but a regular tax refund. Mm-hmm. I sent in by snail mail requesting my refund, and nothing has come through. I tried this morning on the internet, and they sent me to the phone, and they, after all the going through all the questions, they said they, well, we can't answer your question. So I don't know why it's taking quite so long. I do know that they're understaffed, but from April 1st till now is quite a long time.
Well, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but the IRS right now is not processing paper returns, and they haven't really been since they shut down because of the virus. So, unfortunately, you're going to have to wait probably several months before you get your refund. They just don't have the capacity to open mail right now. First of all, their processing centers are down because several people came down with the virus, so that they sent them back and then they had to shut it down again. And so their trailer fulls or rooms full of mail that is not being opened. So paper returns are not being opened to process your return. And there's nothing you can do because you can't electronically file since you've already had a paper return sent in. So I'm just sorry to tell you that they just don't have the capacity. Their staff is not there. And those that are trying to do this, you can imagine, we're right in the middle of the tax season, which has been delayed till July 15th. But in the middle of a normal tax season, which is crazy, you add on the fact that they've been trying to send out stimulus payments and building platforms to send those out. So those things like paper returns and requests for forms and publications have just been put on the back burner because they just don't have the people to process it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'll take out my handkerchief and sniffle.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to tell you that. But don't worry, they're going to get to it when they open back up. But at this point, I'm just going to tell you, probably not till the end of the summer. Now, that's my guesstimate because they don't really even know either. Can you imagine the all American taxpayers and the percentage of people who send in paper? Now, 90% of people file electronically, so you're just caught in that little 10%. But I would encourage you going forward to try to file electronically because they are still processing electronic returns. And they're still fairly close to the about 3 weeks to get your money when you file electronically. So, Nina, next year, if you can, I know some people like to send stuff in the mail, but I'm going to need you to come into the current electronic time period and file electronically if you can. If you, you know,
Yeah, and Michelle, and I know that here in Maine, many Maine libraries, there are a lot of people who don't have high-speed internet, but many Maine libraries have programs where people can come in and use their computers and also get help special nights. So if anyone's listening and thinking, but I don't have a computer, that's also an option. Thank you, Nina, for your call.
Yeah, and I think, and it was also exacerbated because a lot of the organizations that would have helped people file electronically have shut down as well. Because
right.
So normally you'd go in and have them help you. One thing you can do, though, is find a local tax professional who does have internet access. And because that's how they've been doing it this year. They've been on the phone with people taking information. So you would mail it to them because they're, you know, opening their mail. You'd mail all your documents and all that. They would input it, and then they can electronically file it for you. So right now, if you have not filed, I would not recommend doing it by paper, even if you just have to hold off and wait. I mean, obviously, if you owe, you need to file by July 15th. So, you know, see if you can find a local CPA or tax professional who can, if you don't have, you know, reliable internet access or you can't get to something, that can file for you electronically.
Nina, thank you for your call and good luck. I have an email from Michael. My wife and I are retired and have been seeing advice that we can pause our 403B and IRA required minimum distributions. Is this a good idea or not? And could you please explain why or why not?
Yes, yeah, so after a certain age, now that age has been moved with recent tax laws. So it used to be 70 and a half, and it was really complicated. So now it's 72. But basically, after you reach that certain age, as of 2020, it's 72, you have to take money out of your retirement account because the IRS wants their money. It's been growing all these years. They're like, okay, now it's time to pay taxes on this money. And so every year there is a required minimum distribution that you have to make, and it's based on the year-end value of portfolio from the year before. So you'd be making your 2019 RMD now in 2020 based on your year end as of December 2019. Well, the market was doing fairly well by that time, right? But now it's down, and so people don't want to pull money out, or people didn't want to pull money out when the market is down because now they've got, you know, locked in losses when they've got to make these distributions that were predicated on a better time period. So Congress decided to say, okay, and they did this during the housing crisis as well. So you do not have to make your RMDs for 2020 because of that. So if you've already made it, you may have missed the window to put it back in. But you need to contact the investment company that manages your retirement account to get more direction or talk to your tax professional. But you do not have to make 2020 required minimum distributions because of what's been happening with the virus.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Claude, who's calling from Portland. And this is Claude Rouranger, who's been a guest on Maine Calling. Claude, it's nice to hear you calling in.
Nice. Thank you very much for letting me in and ask a question. Claude Rouranger from Prosperity, Maine. I've been listening to your show, Michelle. Nice presentation. So you are talking about debt-free, which is a great concept, even though most people cannot afford it. But I want to ask a specific question in regard to the biweekly mortgage payment, which mm-hmm. is a concept I have heard from many people. Those who cannot afford maybe 15-hour mortgage, they can still split into two. Can you tell us a little bit the benefits of that so people can listen and maybe take advantage of that? Thank you.
Yeah, so lots of companies, not so much so recently, were pitching to people to make biweekly payments. And essentially, you end up making an extra mortgage payment a year, and it makes it a little easier than, you know, making a separate payment from that. But they were also charging people to do that, anywhere from $30 or $50 a month to make that biweekly payment. And that, to me, is just throwing money away. You can do that yourself. And so if you want to do it that way, that's fine. And then the extra money goes towards your principal. The way I personally think the easiest way is that every month you decide how much you can pay towards your principal. Maybe 1 month it's $500, maybe 1 month it's $100. Now, my husband and I do it a consistent amount
every single month. Remember, we talked about early in the program how when we refinanced, we didn't change how the money that we were paying, because we were always paying extra. We just kept it the same way. And so you get to decide. And you can reduce your mortgage by several years every time you make a full payment every year. And so we've been able to bring our principal down so significantly that even though we took out a 15-year mortgage about 3 or 4 years ago, we're going to probably end up paying out a mortgage off in about 5 or 8 years because we were making those principal payments. So don't get caught up with companies that are saying, let us help you do this, and you pay us money to help you do that. Don't do that. That's just a waste of money. Just do it yourself. On you can call your mortgage loan servicer, or if you send in a mail payment, there's usually a line that says principal payment. Now, you want to be very careful to make sure you put it in that line or send it separately from your monthly payment so they don't apply it to next month. So just make sure that they are applying the extra money towards your principal. And again, you can change it every month. You can make one lump sum every year, and that will also knock it down. I like doing it every month because you get more traction that way, because, you know, they're charging you interest every month, and if you can bring the principal down, that's less interest every month. But if you can't do that, that's okay. Do it every other month, but try to make at least one principal payment a year if you can, and that will knock several years off of your mortgage.
Claude, I'm so glad you're still on the line. Michelle, Claude founded an organization called Prosperity Maine to help new Mainers, immigrants, with financial education and support. And Claude, what I'm wondering from you is, what are the people that you work with, what is their biggest question right now during the COVID pandemic when it comes to financial security?
That is a very good question. Most of the people that we work with and work into the low-paying jobs, either the housekeeping jobs or mental health jobs. So most of them actually, I would say, have lost their jobs because the industry where they work have been closed. And because of that, we actually have changed the way we've been doing the service. Instead of doing our normal, regular financial literacy, we turned ourselves into helping them because some of them don't have access to technology, they have language barrier. We have turned into doing actually unemployment work for them, helping them to make the employment for the Maine Department of Labor. So definitely budgeting is an issue for them. The challenge of paying the rent and mortgage is an issue because it's taking so long for some of them actually to be able to even receive the unemployment benefits that they have applied for. So we have seen a lot of challenges into the immigrant community. And also we have seen other challenges of applying for PPP, small businesses owner, who also maybe may not be eligible for those because they don't have employers. So the self-employment is another challenge for the PPP for them as well. So it is a challenge moment that we have never seen, but hopefully we can overcome that, all of us together.
Well, Claude Mirangi from Prosperity Maine, thanks so much for calling in. Nice to hear your voice. Michelle, before we let Claude go, anything you would like to add to talk to him?
Well, I just think what he's doing is just wonderful. And what I love when people do these kinds of programs is that they are already on the ground before the crisis hits. And they're the exact places that people should turn and donate to help folks, because they know how to serve people where they are. And I run a program, so ironically, I run a program through my church called Prosperity Partners, and it's a financial education ministry where we meet every month to talk about how to handle your money, and we've been doing this for years and years, and many of the people that we've been teaching have come back to say, we're so glad we were in this program, because even though we've lost our job or somebody else has lost our job in our family, we've been able to sustain ourselves because we put in practice the things that you were teaching all along.
Well, nice to hear from you, Claude. We're going to move on, and I'm going to go to Diane, who's calling from Owl's Head. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. Very quickly, I have a sense that single women often don't do as well as other taxpayers in the current situation, do you see that being true?
Well, obviously, being single, you have you're relying on yourself. Where with a spouse, if only one of you lost your job, you can maybe last a little bit longer. As I work with folks, those who are single, you know, you have to save a little bit more and have a little bit more emergency funds, because you're only relying on your income. So it's definitely a problem for single men and women, and especially in this type of crisis.
Diane, thanks for your call. A tweet from Andrew. As a young retirement saver, I was once advised never to early withdraw from my 401k except in cases of societal collapse. So where do we rate now?
Well, some say we are in societal collapse. I mean, you listen to Claude and talk about, you know, people, very low-income people who were just barely making. They were on the financial edge, and this pandemic pushed them over. And so I think when you listen to financial advice, many of us, I'm a black and white kind of person, and so I don't have a lot of gray area, because when I tell you not to be in debt, I want you to think of debt like, I always joke that if debt was a person, I'd slap it. So I'm way over here, but there is advice during times like this that you do have to put that to the side. You can't make paying your credit card a priority when you don't have food and you have to pay rent. So you need to call your credit card company and say, I just can't pay this. When we come out of this crisis, organizations like Claude's or my kind of organization will help you reestablish yourself. But right now, you need to take care of the necessities. And so the advice to not touch that retirement fund until the whole, you know, society collapses, you know, in times of good, it's a sort of a way, a scare tactic. But right now, we have to give people grace and understand that even the best of savers may not be able to sustain themselves much longer if you have not had a job for 3 or 4 months. And so if that money is there and you can tap it and not have to take on more expensive jobs, it's like the difference between taking on a loan that's going to be 20 or 30% and tapping your retirement fund where you're not going to get a penalty. I'd rather you tap that retirement fund than try to take out a loan or put more money on your credit card that you can't afford. Maybe down the road that you may have to do that, but let's just pause and of all the scenarios, take the least, the one that will have the least impact on your financial life. And yeah, it may mean that you have to work a little longer and put more money in down the road, but it's okay. I just want to tell people, if you have to do what you have to do right now, it's okay. It really is. So ask your lender for a pause in your payment. Tap your retirement fund if you have to. Only tap what you absolutely need. And if you have to go back, you have to go back. But right now, the necessities are what you need to focus on. I call it like triaging your bills. And I'm trying to make the story short, but if you ever go to an emergency room and it's very crowded, they will take the most critical patients first. So you may be sitting there with a jammed thumb thinking, well, wait a minute, I've been here for 2 hours. Why are you taking this person? Because they're having a heart attack. And your thumb, while it's very important to you, it's not a heart attack. So you have to treat your bills that way. Putting food on your table, that's the heart attack. Keeping a roof over your head, that's the heart attack. Your credit card bills, that's just a jammed thumb right now.
Michelle Singletary on Maine Calling. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, she'll answer more of your questions.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, sending its heartfelt thanks to Maine's healthcare workers, first responders, elder care workers, and all the everyday heroes helping Maine people. And Maine Community Foundation, working with donors to expedite funding to nonprofits in this unprecedented time. Learn more at mainecf.org.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On May 26, 1998, Governor Angus King announced that ownership of the Edwards Dam on the Kennebec River would be transferred to Maine and that the dam would be dismantled. The dam's license had expired in 1997, and the dam owners wished to renew it. However, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission refused to grant their request. Invoking a 1986 federal law, it was deemed that the value of the electricity that the dam produced did not offset the negative environmental impact of the dam to the region.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine!
The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus usually takes place at about 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is scheduled for 2 weekday afternoons and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, answers to your personal finance questions. My guest is the Washington Post personal finance columnist, Michelle Singletary, also the author of several books. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. An email here from JW, Michelle. If the economy really gets to a collapse point where there are runs on failing banks and food riots, are there any relatively safe places to keep one's money other than buried diamonds and gold in the backyard or under the mattress?
Well, to the latter, no, unless you're going to give me your address, you know, where you're not going to be home. You know, even during the most dire times, most recent times, think about the savings and loans crisis, which is taking you back to the 80s. No, there was no bank that failed in which people lost money that were in FDIC-insured bank accounts. So I don't think we are at that point. We are not at that point. So you don't have to worry that you need to have a run on the bank and pull out your money. In fact, that's a very dangerous thing because once you pull it out now, if it gets lost or stolen, it's gone. And I encourage people to go to the FDIC website to look at how much of your money is protected, because normally we think of it as just $250,000, but it's actually more than that depending on how your bank account is titled. Now, yes, your financial investments are not protected by FDIC, but that's the risk you take in investing. But in terms of your bank accounts, no. In fact, I probably don't even have $20 in my wallet right now, and I'm not worried at all about my money, my savings, and the bank account. You don't have to worry about that.
It's funny to hear you say that. I know that a lot of people don't carry cash anymore, but I'm thinking that's usually the sort of 20-something generation.
Well, for me, I don't carry cash because if I have cash, you know, I use it. So it's sort of a way for me to not use cash. And I don't use my debit card for cash payments. I only use it for groceries and gas. So I'm not using even that to make purchases. So it's just a way for me to not spend a lot of money. So if I'm out and say I don't shop very much, but say I'm out and I want something to eat and I don't have cash and I'm not going to use my credit card. So now I'm thinking, oh, well, I need to go home and make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So it's just a way for me. But you don't need to carry a lot of cash. And you don't have to have a lot in your house right now. All the systems are still working. You can still withdraw money the way you normally do. And I don't think you have to be. There's a lot we need to be worried about, but that's not one of them.
An email from Thomas. Many Mainers are harshly impacted by the windfall elimination provision, which can reduce one's Social Security benefits by up to 50%. The WEP impacts people who paid into state retirement and Social Security. The House and Senate both have bills before them but have taken no action. How can this penalty be removed?
Well, I hear from a lot of folks that this happens, and many people may not be familiar with it. So essentially, and usually impacts more people who've not paid into the system, but sometimes it catches people who paid into the system, or maybe their spouse didn't, and they did. And so, but the initially, the idea is that if you don't pay Social Security, you wouldn't get money back from it because you have to pay into the system. You have to have a certain amount of credits. But there are people who are getting caught in a little in the cracks of this this issue. And the way that you try to move things is you've got to press your legislators. I mean, you've got to call them. You've got to write to them. It's harder because we don't have these big lobbying dollars, but we've got to get them to move that we can help those people who do fall into the cracks for the windfall elimination payments.
We'll go to Maury, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Maury. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. And thank you, Mrs. Singletary, for your information. I'm an attorney that advises and helps a lot of people having financial problems. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in your comments about taking money out of retirement accounts, because many times I have folks who are in considerable debt who I talk to, and they explain that they have exhausted the money in their retirement accounts, usually to pay for credit cards. Mm-hmm. And people should know that the law in the state of Maine, as in many of the states, provides a specific protection for retirement account funds. So in almost every case, creditors are not lawfully permitted to take money out of a person's retirement account, even if they go to court, even if they get a judgment against them for the credit card debt and loads of interest. They cannot take that retirement account money. So the reason for this special protection is that the law understands how important those savings are for people when they reach old age. And usually I tell people you shouldn't have touched that money. You should leave it there no matter what. And so people need to keep that in mind also, and I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, you make a really good point. I would say the only thing I would correct or take issue with is no matter what, because we're in a no matter what situation right now. There are people who need to tap it, but you are correct that I have never recommended people pull money out of their retirement to pay off a credit card debt. I help them get on a debt payment plan so that they can pay that off. I also don't recommend people take loans from their retirement in normal times to pay off credit card debt or pay down their house or do whatever. Because that money is there for your retirement. And we know that Social Security is going to have a funding crisis in 15 years. And so we're not sure what is going to happen. They may reduce benefits. They may increase taxes. We just don't know. And so although I do believe Social Security will always be there, we're not so sure what, you know, in what form. Maybe they'll raise the full retirement age to 70. So you have to try to, as much as you can, build in some savings for retirement. And you can't do that if you keep nitpicking at your retirement funds. But right now, this is a different category of folks that I think you try not to tap it as much as you can. Exhaust all your other resources. But if you can't, this is a no matter what time.
And I would simply add to that, to those words of wisdom, that before a person does that, consider calling an attorney who does bankruptcy cases or does financial types of work for consumers to get some free advice over the telephone on what your legal options are, because you may find out that you don't need to take those funds out and there are other alternatives. Again, thank you.
Maury, I appreciate your call. Yeah, we're going to go on to Elliot, Maine, and Dennis. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got two questions, and the first you just touched on, actually both of them. Given the situation we are in right now, and you've been talking about taking early withdrawals from 401ks and IRAs being, you know, maybe a desperate move, wouldn't it be better to take that loan from yourself, from your IRA or 401k, and then at least you can pay yourself back and kind of minimize that long-term pain? And then,
so you mean if you have a choice between taking a loan or withdrawal, if you're trying to decide one or the other? I would say of the two, a loan would be better. If it truly is a situation where you've exhausted all avenues, then yes, a loan is better because you are paying it back to yourself. However, under the CARES Act, either a loan or withdrawals, you can put that money back. There's a 3-year period. So they relax a lot of the rules around that. So just look at your different options Because with a loan, you know, you've got to make a payment, and you may not be in a position to make a payment right now. So you may now there is a break on that payment, but coming back, if you're still trying to recover, I'd rather you have just taken the withdrawal and not add another debt, even though you're paying yourself back.
Gotcha. Second one, if I may, is related to the Social Security matter that you talked about and all the different things on the table to kind of mitigate that problem. And it seems to me raising the salary threshold or ceiling for when you make, you know, Social Security tax payments should be raised. And it just seems to be the obvious no-brainer solution to part of it. And why? What's all the resistance? Is it just simply the people that are legislating don't need it as much as others, or what's the resistance?
Well, yeah, you know, obviously the people at the higher end, you know, big taxpayers don't want to see that raised. I forget what the limit is. I think it's $137,000, $700,000
yeah,
for
2020. There, yeah.
So anybody who makes $137,700 or less has to pay Social Security taxes. Once you get past that, you no longer have to pay that. So clearly people, that's higher income folks who tend to carry favor with legislators. So, but I tend to agree with you. That may be the easier solution, just remove the cap, because, you know, we've got people who are making millions of dollars and they stop paying Social Security tax at $137,700 for 2020. That doesn't seem to be fair. So that could be, but I think everything needs to be on the table short of cutting benefits. And we discuss it and make a move to do something to shore up Social Security in the future.
Dennis, thanks so much for your call. We just have about a minute and a half left. And Michelle, I'm going to give that time to you to ask you to put us in a good headspace as we, here we are a couple months into this pandemic, but no idea when it's going to end, no idea how many more people will lose their jobs. Give us a pep talk.
So the one thing I keep telling people right now, and I have to tell this to myself, even though I'm still employed, my husband's still employed, but my heart goes out to my volunteer work is with people from, you know, living on just, you know, paycheck to paycheck, $20,000 a year, so I get it. But this too shall pass. We have to keep saying that to ourselves, even if you're in the midst of this tragedy, it will pass. So if you're in that category of you've lost your job or you've had a reduction in income, or maybe it's not you, but it's your children, your adult children, you mourn, because this is a mourning time, right? But then act. Do what you can do. Apply for whatever services are available to you. That may mean public service for the first time in your life. It may be calling someone and saying, I need help. We have to put our pride to the side right now. If you're still working, or maybe some of your income has been reduced or you still have your paycheck, then I hope that you have an emergency fund. You have secured yourself so that then you can turn around and help other people. That's the two messages right now, because I will never tell people not to worry or not be concerned or not be fearful, because we're just human and that's what's going to happen. But don't act on that fear. If everything is the same, don't rush and pull money out of your retirement fund or move it to something if you already have a plan in place and it was working. This is going to pass. Don't panic sell. You're locking those losses. If you have to tap it because that's what you have to do, then do what you have to do. And don't feel bad about the fact that you've lost your job through no fault of your own. And so all of us, I think this pandemic more than anything has shown us that everybody else's fate relates to our fate. It used to be, oh, that's them over there. No, that's not them over there. That's them over us here. You know, they say the tide lifts all boats. That's what we need to take from this.
Michelle, I have to stop you, even though you're so lovely. That's Michelle Singletary, the Washington Post personal financial consultant. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling.